Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hull. I'm delighted again to be able to be joined by stock market commentator and equity analyst Paul Scott to discuss all things small cap. So welcome, Paul.
Hello, Paul, and hello, everyone watching. Paul the Parrot and Ben, I hope.
Yeah, we know we've got plenty of people already just loading up the questions. Great to have you back on the show. The markets now seem to have sort of regained their poise, which is pretty good. We've got the sort of big caps up around about 4%, the FTSE All Share. We've got small caps down 2.5%, and yours and mine, our portfolios, our W1s are sort of in the middle of the pack, but leading the charge, we actually have Michael Taylor's top six at 7%, followed by Ed Croft's, which is no admin portfolio, at about 5.5%, and then we've got Stockopedia's Christmas top twelve at 4.6%, and Graham Nair is unfortunately is taking up the rear at the moment because I think he's heavily into financials, which got hit by the yield and stuff like that. But just in terms of animal spirits, have you seen any sort of improvement at all in over the last this last week or so?
No, I mean, in small caps, it still see, you know, there's still what is quite obviously just irrational liquidity driven selling, you know, snuffing out share price rises. I mean, we are seeing some nice bounces on trading updates. I don't know if you've noticed, but lots of things seem to rise 7%. I don't know why 7%, but I've seen loads of them up 7% on a trading update, even if it's in line. But other things just seem to be facing absolutely unrelenting selling, and it doesn't seem to be connected to what the trading updates say. For example, today you had CMC Markets put out an inline update, and it's dropped about, I think at the last count, about 17%. It's just a very, very strange market. I think it's stock by stock based on have you got forced sellers in those stocks, because a lot of these UK smaller company equity funds are just seeing relentless fund outflows, and I don't see any sign of that abating.
Yeah, we'll come on to that a bit later on. But one thing which does seem to have had more impact on the markets this last 10 days is the amount of government influence on certain sectors, because we had it with, first of all, obviously, with the Rachel Reeves getting involved with the car finance things, trying to intervene on the Supreme Court. We also had it that the government sacked the head of the CMA. Yeah. Now they've sort of like introduced a competitor to Trainline in the sort of like, you know, the train booking in the UK. Mm. And it's sort of like wondering about what they're going to do going forward in terms of other areas, maybe the vet side or oil and gas. I don't know what your thoughts are. And they do now seem to be sort of trying to jumpstart some growth, having absolutely nailed employers with higher NI.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, all of those are good points. I mean, with the CMA one, the head, I think the chairman of that was supposedly being fired for not being pro-growth enough and for sort of blocking too many deals. So that could be helpful for the vets, CVS Group and Pets at Home. I have a small position in Pets at Home, just for full disclosure. So hopefully they might not be damaged quite so much by the CMA inquiry that's underway there. As you say, the car finance mis-selling thing, which was mooted to be as large as 30 billion in possible compensation. The Treasury apparently has intervened there, or is trying to intervene with the Supreme Court. I don't know what if any powers they actually have to intervene, but they're trying to get the payouts to be more sort of not just, you know, vast. And I think Santander might have preempted that by threatening to pull out of the UK. But then a day later, they said, oh, no, we're actually staying. But of course, STB Bank and Close Brothers put on a big 20-30% spurt this week, which we're heavily exposed to the car financing side of things. I've decided not to get involved there because it's just little more than a guesswork, yeah. Really, isn't it? I think we've discussed that before. But you're right, there do seem to be a lot of kind of government-driven things just unexpectedly happening. So, yeah, a bit of an unsettling backdrop, really, I'd say, overall.
Well, I think the government getting involved, if they're trying to boost GDP, is a real positive, and actually has lifted, yeah. We've seen it, has lifted shares. Another sector that I think is worth highlighting to investors is oil and gas. We've seen it over in the States. Mm. We've talked about the one you hold, which is Hunting, which frankly has got to be a beneficiary of Drill Baby Drill, which is the, you know, onshore shale and gas, which they're one of the leaders in all that sort of exercise. Another one on this side of the Atlantic, which is a favourite of Roland Head, one of your ex-colleagues. And also I spoke to Paul Jordan of Amati, who also owns it, dead cheap. And it's basically priced to destruction, is Serica Energy. And I raise it. I don't own any oil and gas, but it's on a 4.5 times PE. It pays currently, because it's generating a shed load of cash, 15% yield, because it's got some stock carried forward losses. And it's basically, it's a North Sea oil and gas producer. And it's got modest amounts of debt. And I've got a sneaky suspicion at some point in time, the government is going to start rolling back all of these punitive sort of energy profits. And the reason why is because big operators like Shell, BP, and all these guys have pulled out of the North Sea. And therefore, yeah. There's going to be a stage that it's going to lose all sort of critical mass unless they do something. And it's going to just all these, because it's one of our sort of like crown jewels. So I think at some point, the UK government is going to follow Trump and won't do a drill baby drill type thing. But I think they'll start being a bit more beneficial, because particularly, you know, now that we've got Brent around about $70-$75 a barrel, which is only just really above their full cost. I don't know what your thoughts are on the sort of the North Sea oil and gas, because Serica Energy, to be frank, is just priced at ridiculously low levels, 4.5 times PE.
Yeah, it's not my sector at all, but so I wouldn't want to make say that much about it. But one thing I do remember when I looked at some oil and gas stocks a few years ago was that a lot of them were incredibly cheap on PE because the fields were, and I believe most of the North Sea fields are end of life. And then you've also got huge decommissioning costs that they have to accrue for. So that's worth taking into account. And as with government policy, they seem to have not learned from the 2002 energy crisis that actually energy security is really far more important than any other considerations. And it reminds me of the famous quote, I forget what it was about, where they said the government seems to be, you know, always does the right thing, having exhausted all other options first.
You're absolutely spot on. But I do think, given the direction of travel in terms of what they've done with the CMA, i.e., the CMA has been too restrictive, and what they're doing in terms of the car finance, it's actually not helping jobs and growth. I just would not be surprised. Our crown jewel sort of industries, whether it's defense, whether it's fintech, whether it's AI, life sciences, I've got a sneak suspicion we've got to play to our strengths. And I'm hoping the message is finally getting through that the government just can't just bash these and tax them. Like the city as well, yes. The banks is another one.
Yeah, I think that's right. And in today's papers, actually, they said they're going to, because there's been this well-documented and quantified exodus of millionaires and squillionaires, they're now apparently going to start backtracking on the non-dom tightening up, because it could end up costing us money in terms of lost GDP. So they're learning the hard way, aren't they, that their dogma is actually counterproductive. And, like you say, that's actually a positive development. So praise credit where credit's due, I suppose. Yeah.
But I think it's an area that investors should think about in terms of where sectors have been overly hit of late.
Yes.
They may have upside up. If you're not getting any... If you're not having to pay, it's just a freebie. It's like an option value that if they start rolling back, it's going to be, you will actually see a big move. But it's something to think about.
Yeah, and you are getting, No, I agree. And you are getting some nice big rebounds on a lot of trading updates over the last 3 weeks. I mean, just this morning we had Watkin Jones, the build to rent and student block developer that pre-sells the developments. Pretty wobbly outlook for September 2025. But despite that, the balance sheet net tangible asset value is over double the market cap. It's cashed up. It's got more than its own market cap in cash, although half of that is earmarked for remediation work, but that's over quite a few years. And the shares were up about 20-25%, despite the wobbly outlook. So, I'm seeing lots of rebounds. The question, though, is do the stale bulls then just sell into those rebounds? So I think probably the people who are just nipping in and out and grabbing their bits are probably doing the right thing on a lot of these things, actually.
Yeah, that was a good point. Good point. Okay, let's move to another sector. I know we've talked about before, fund manager. We've got Aberdeen. Or if you're Scottish, do you want to give us the Scottish accent for how you pronounce Aberdeen?
Aberdeen. Something like that, isn't it?
Love it. Okay.
I don't want to alienate 8% of our audience, so I take that back. Yes, this one announced on Tuesday, in line with a trading update. I'm fairly new to analysing fund managers, so bear with me on this. I'm not a sector expert. But what stood out to me was actually, assets under management and administration were up, but it does own Interactive Investing, the low margin, low cost dealing platform. So you can't really value the client's assets in that as you would, say, a lucrative managed fund. So it's not really like for like. But the standout features on it, the value features, are a 10% yield. Now, I know quite a few fund managers are offering 10% yields, not quite covered by earnings with Aberdeen. But what is interesting, which I've not seen before, I got it right that time. What is interesting is it's below tangible book value. It's 0.75 times tangible book. Now, the balance sheet is quite large and complicated, but I haven't seen any of the other fund managers where you're actually buying it for less than its own net tangible asset value. So I'm saying, and it's cost cutting, and it's doing another, I think, 100 million of cost cutting. So I think this looks quite interesting, and I'm just flagging the idea for people to have a look at. I'm not recommending anything because I haven't done the full due diligence. You know, I cover 700 companies, so my stuff is necessarily superficial. But have you looked at Aberdeen, Paul?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's got that sort of crown jewel in there, the Interactive Investors, hasn't it, platform, which is a bit like AJ Bell. I think it's growing fast, and it's sucking in sort of like, you know, DIY type of investors. Plus, it's got the standard life side, and then it's got your emerging market exposure. So you'd have to look it on a bit of a sum of the parts. But I'm with you. They've now seemed to have gone through a lot of their wobbles. 10% dividend yield, near enough PE of 11. It looks a very good safe play to sort of like play that big the upswing in sort of like emerging markets and stock markets around the world to me. But it seems a good pick, actually, Paul.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting. And as I say, most of the other fund managers I've looked at recently are on sort of 3x tangible book. This one's at 0.75 tangible book. So that's a real standout. I don't understand why there's that huge, if any of the readers know why there's such a huge discount to tangible book, which is obviously a good thing, then leave a comment and let us know.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay, if anybody wants to ask Paul any questions, please put in the chat. But we've got one from George Annan, a new listener, I think. But it's a company I certainly don't know. It's Pantheon Resources. Do you know anything about that at all?
Anything with resources or energy in the name, I won't know anything about.
Okay, apologies on that, George. What we can give you, though, is a stock that is capital limited, basically, in mining. It does. The reason why I'm raising it, because it's a Richard Staveley, who's a rock star fund manager from Rockwood Strategic. He owns it. And it basically makes mining equipment or rents out mining equipment to enlarging the precious metals. And the reason why I mention it is that they basically are trading at around about 70% of net tangible book, and which is compared to a sector of about 1.2 times. They're paying a 4% dividend yield, have a good solid balance sheet on about 1x EBITDA, and a 6x, they've got a 6x PE ratio. And they should be a beneficiary of higher precious metals and gold price, and they're trying to diversify away from renting out drilling equipment in Africa, which is their heartland, and they're going into a big project out in the States, the Nevada gold mines, and they've got really good customers: Barrick Gold, Centamin, Anglo Gold, and effectively most of the money they make is in drilling rigs and transport and lab services. But if you're looking for a mining play, a picks and shovels play on precious metal mining, I think you can probably, you know, don't look too far away from these guys, because they have an investment portfolio as well, which could well generate lots of extra sort of, like, you know, value to it. I'm guessing you haven't looked at this one, Paul, before.
I did, actually. Yeah, it reported this week on Monday. I only did a very quick review of it. It was a trading update for December year end 24. Now, it dropped 8% on the announcement of the trading update, so the market didn't like it. It gave an update on it. It's got some major new contracts. I think they're in Pakistan.
Yes.
Pakistan, aren't they?
Yes.
That sound highly material to the company's overall fleet. It said 2024 revenues were slightly below forecast and that it was a challenging year. So it sounded a little bit downbeat about 2024. And I found with this update there was just too much detail in it, but it didn't pull it together and give what the overview was, which you get from a frustratingly high number of companies. We had another one today that was like that. I can't remember which one. So the update sounded a bit negative in tone, I thought, for Capital CAPD is the ticker. But you're right, the value metrics of the share do look pretty good, don't they? And it's largely gone sideways, really, between 60p and a pound over the last 5 years. But I'm guessing you would have had a flow of dividends. Yeah, there's been a reasonable dividend income from it. It doesn't stand out as being particularly good to me, but yeah.
Well, it's one of the Richard Staveley sort of, like, in his portfolio. And
okay. So what's his angle on it then? Because he's always found an interesting angle, hasn't he?
Well, you'll find out next week, because unfortunately I've got a diary clash. So that's next Friday. So I'm speaking to him, and this is on it, you see. So it was quite a good one. That it's cheap, sound balance sheet and stuff like that, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. We've got surprise. We've got a question on Beeks Financial. It's Mr. N.A. So he doesn't actually say what his name is, but give us a quick update on Beeks. Cause I think they announced, didn't they, that they're just, did you just reveal that big customer, NASDAQ?
Yeah, that's right. We knew, we've known for quite a long time, private investors have, because some clever dick found a document online which unequivocally showed that Beeks was providing the cloud solutions for NASDAQ. So, and we got this week what Canaccord called the big reveal. So they finally announced it. But as I say, it was widely known. So it caused really a bit of a blip up in share price, which was quickly sold into, as a lot of things are at the moment, stale bulls sell. But it contained a couple of interesting nuggets, actually, where it said that this was a contract that was capable of growing very considerably. The clients are not being onboarded until February, imminently. So we don't really know at this stage what uptake there will be of this NASDAQ cloud facility. I mean, to a certain extent, you would have thought that anybody who wanted to connect to NASDAQ already would be connected, wouldn't you? Because it's such a huge liquid market. And there was a little bit of confusion over whether this is in the forecasts or not. So a couple of question marks there we need to ask management about. It's a June year end. So it looks like the contract won't actually particularly move the dial for the current financial year. But I mean, what a reference site, you know, and they've got at least two other major exchange deals in the pipeline. So saying, when you're trying to sell a cloud computing system to an exchange, saying, oh, by the way, we're just onboarding NASDAQ, I mean, it doesn't get better than that, does it? So I think that's the big, I'm sitting tight on this. It's not cheap. Beeks Financial shares are expensive on conventional metrics, as we discussed before. But this type of high organic growth a tech company with a big moat doesn't come cheap. A lot of them are on your type of metrics, price to sales, price to sales, and sort of 18 times EBITDA. Those are quite normal valuations for this type of thing. And by those type of valuations, Beaks is actually got further upside on it. So yeah, I'm sitting tight on mine. I think this is a winner.
Yeah, well, I think it's always been relatively expensive. And that was sort of like, you know, and if you hadn't have gone in because of just stroke valuation, you'd have missed 150% upside. So,
yes, that's right. I think Canaccord pointed out, I think it was the best performing tech share in the UK last year, I believe. Mm. Which does make you think, doesn't it? Well, how much more upside is there? But I think there's considerable amount. I mean, it seems to be becoming the specialist cloud computing connectivity provider for global exchanges, because it's already going with, it's done very well with Johannesburg. And management did say, actually, often it's those kind of second tier or even third tier exchanges that can be very lucrative, because global banks won't necessarily have a direct link into those smaller exchanges, but they want one. So quite interesting how this is all panning out, but it's a very, very good organic growth story, I think, Beaks. It's very exciting, actually.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, let's cover another one. It's a couple of tech stocks as well, a bit earlier stage. We've got Caudle, which does sort of like LiDAR AI-powered applications for the rail industry. It helps basically maintenance and looking at the tracks and basically using LiDAR. And it's got great customers.
What's LiDAR, Paul?
It's basically light detection radar, essentially. So basically, it throws out a laser. It then gets the laser as it goes through the air, gets hit with like dust and droplets of rain and whatever it is in the air. You get then it's that scattered back, and depending on the frequency of the dust, will give you a 3D image of what's around the surroundings. Whether it's basically the vegetation, the tracks, whether it's obstructions for safety. It's got brilliant sort of customer references, and is showing some pretty good top line growth. I don't know if you've had a look at this one, because it's obviously the technology is very good.
Yes, I think that rang a bell with LiDAR. I think they use that on the Tesla self-driving cars as well, don't they? Or one of their competitors does, I think.
Yes, on the competitors, yeah.
Yeah. One of my subscribers for my Substack actually said, "Paul, I'm dying for you to have a look at Cordell." And I said, "Okay, you're on." I said, "If you upgrade to premium, I'll look at it." and he said, "Well, I was going to anyway, but thank you." So for that reason, I thought, well, I've got to honor my side of the bargain. So I had a good review of it yesterday. I have to say, I like this. I'm not generally, I try to avoid sort of very, very small cash burning, loss-making jam tomorrow shares, because it's the biggest leak in all our portfolios. And I think you'd probably agree, Paul, because we've all had some howlers in these type of jam tomorrow shares.
But I'll tell you though, I've had many a howler in going for value plays.
Oh, basically. That's a good point. Yeah. I take that. Yeah, good, very good retort. So now with Cordell, what I like about it, the H1 results came out. That was it. I had a look at them. Now, the revenue growth sequentially wasn't good. It was actually slightly down on H2 last year. So that was a bit disappointing. But it's very upbeat in the commentary about H2 this year, which is going to be January to June this year, saying they stand by the revenue projections. You can see a note on it on Research Tree. From one of the big name brokers, but it's ramping up its overhead. So even though they're expecting much higher revenue in H2, it's still going to be slightly loss making, but it's near enough to break even to mean that I'm okay about that. Very interestingly as well, Rathbones popped £1 million into it in a placing at a small premium to the share price in October. Now, that is brilliant, because Rathbones are very highly regarded and respected. So for them to want to put £1 million, which is tiny loose change to them, for them to want to put that in at a premium to a microcap growth thing really tells you that they have done their due diligence and they rate this thing. So I think that's quite exciting, actually. And the shares are in a nice uptrend. They've roughly doubled in the next year. I think it might need to do a top-up placing again, but I don't mind, because it's 17 million market cap. So if they raise, say, 10% dilution at a reasonable price, I'm quite relaxed about that. And I should disclose, I did pick up a very small speculative scrap of these because I like a good story as much as anyone else. I think it's a bit too pricey. I would have preferred to buy it at sub 10 million market cap. So I did pay a bit over the odds, really, at 17 million market cap. But I just wanted to be in on the fun, really, with a small position, because I think this looks quite credible. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it actually to Paul Jordan on Monday, and we came to the conclusion that it's going to get bought out probably by somebody like Traxys at some point in time, because the customer list is to die for, and they've got really good technology, and if they can crack the UK and the US, those are massive markets, and tightening regulation and that whole digitization. So I think it's a very, very good
solution. It's interesting,
isn't it?
There must be other people doing the same thing, probably lots of them. And it does say that some of the contract wins recently have been announced. It said it won them in a competitive tender. So that's good. That seems to imply they've got something good. I hope they're not undercutting. And I'd like to see some evidence of proper recurring long-term revenues. I think most of what they're doing at the moment, and it's global, as you say, it's not just UK, it's America and the Far East and Asia. I think I'd like to see some of these become recurring revenues, because they look like they're probably only trials or pilots at the moment. Do you have any?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, they've got this basically a data as a service. So, they'll do it'll be like a cloud-based subscription service that rail users and rail, like network rail, just subscribe and use it each month, and it gets better as they do.
So have we got any, is there any evidence that customers have signed up in terms of long-term contracts? Or my question really is it just doing trial up? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. But I know that's the direction of travel.
Yes.
I think it's good technology. Another one which is also worth putting on the sort of highlighting in that same space is Windar Photonics. Okay. And they're a low cost designer of LIDAR sort of systems, but this time not for rail, but basically for improving the performance and efficiency of wind turbines, like the Vestas wind times. And they also improve the lifetime, reduce the lifetime cost. And they've got a software as a service, which is basically, you know, they call it LIDAR as a service for these wind farms. And they've got lots of big contracts, like hundreds of these, you know, wind turbines basically in the States and stuff like that. And they're using exactly the same technology, the AI. And the reason why I think it's worth highlighting is they're a bit further on than Cordal if you want to get into this area. They've got slightly more turnover, about 6 to 7 million euros, but they're going to have, if you believe the numbers, I think it's from Pan Muir, they're going to have a transformation on this year and do 16 million, where they'll basically, you know, do 5 cents EPS 13 times. And the technology comes out of Denmark, which is the leader in wind. And that's, you know, but likewise, there is competition. They can put this technology, retrofitting existing turbines, and also for constructing new turbines. So I think this is another one which is really, if you're interested in early stage sort of high tech AI powered LIDAR systems, which will give you sort of like digital imaging real time to improve verticals like this one being wind farms or rail, you know, infrastructure, then I think we've got some really fascinating companies on AIM that people can you know, have basically back effectively.
Yes, I've heard the name, but I've always dismissed this one as a sort of jam tomorrow cash burner. But actually, looking at the latest numbers, it does, the growth in 2023, it almost more than doubled revenues, as you say, and got close to break even. So it looks like it's one of those companies that's at the inflection point, doesn't it?
Yes, I mean, it does, yeah.
If they achieve the 2025 forecasts, I'll eat my hat, because I don't think I've ever seen a company go from 5 million revenue to, or no, 6 million revenue to 16 million revenue, and from nothing to 5 million profit in 1 year. So that to me doesn't look credible, but it might happen. And the problem is 53 million market cap. There's no room for disappointment, is there, with Windar? So, yes, I think it looks very interesting, but I'd want to build up some severe confidence that those forecasts are realistic before parting with any money. But thank you for the stock idea, because I wouldn't have spotted it otherwise.
No, as I say, it was another one. Paul Jordan, he's brilliant when I speak to Paul. He comes out with these ones which I've never really covered before, but they're fascinating. And he's a PhD, so he's gone through these technologies like a fine tooth comb. And if he believes in it, then they've got to pass the smell test. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. The trouble is, they invested in a lot of them when they were way too early stage and when they needed more cash. So I think the fund has been a bit of a disaster, hasn't it?
In part. I think it was very good early days, but struggled obviously with a higher interest rate environment. Okay, let's move on to another question. We've got Zoo Look. He's asking about Colfax, which I think is a soft furnishing.
Oh, yes.
What is it actually? It's something to do with home furnishings, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's quite similar to Sanderson Design. So I think it's fabrics and wallpaper. Now, this one I look at very occasionally. It's very illiquid share. And they, but it's a lovely business, you know, very nice, profitable track record. And they seem to use all their cash flows to buy back their own shares on a big scale. So for example, in 2019, it had 10 million shares in issue. It now has 5.9 million. So that is a tremendous buyback program. But of course, that then makes it more and more illiquid. That's the main problem with it. So actually trying to get a position in this share is going to be difficult. And you've got four major shareholders who between them own 70%. So liquidity is the main issue here. But I covered its results. I have a feeling, I'm thinking yesterday or the day before, and it was the H1 figures, I think, and they were flat. Profit was flat. Mm. But that is a good outcome, given how tough the higher end furnishings market is. So, for example, Sanderson Design, their profits were down about 70%, whereas Colfax were flat. So very, very good. Also, it's got 40% of the market cap in net cash. And that is genuinely spare net cash. So I think for value or growth at reasonable price investors who look at sort of off the radar things, Colfax gets a big thumbs up for me. Yeah, it's green on my traffic light system. I like it a lot, but I don't hold any myself. For people who just like to buy things and hold them for years, because the spread is prohibitive otherwise, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know myself a great deal about it. What's the PE on it? I'm guessing it's sort of pretty low.
Ooh, quite low, about 12, I'm thinking 10 or 12 or something. Maybe slightly less. Yeah, 10. And bear in mind, 40% of the market cap is cash. Although, of course, you can't just strip that out these days because they're earning interest on it. So you'd need to take the cash off the market cap to get the enterprise value. But then you'd need to adjust earnings down to take off the interest income. Mm. Which I can't be bothered to do. So,
okay, we've got a question coming in from Ben Sharman. He's asking about Zotefoam, your latest view. And they've got that sort of option thing resource, which I think they've put on ice, haven't they? But any latest thoughts on Zotefoam?
Yes, well, my co-writer, Dave Wild, he looked at this today. We sometimes like to swap them over, even though actually both he and I have personal positions in Zotefoam. We thought it was a good update. I think it was ahead of expectations and a record profit. As you say correctly, the Blue Sky Project resource has been binned now. I mean, you know, it's possible it might come back to life, but I think we can just forget about that, which they did pre-announce in about November last year, but the market, which is why the market has sold off the shares very considerably, too much, I think. It's oversold now. Current PE is about 10 for a high quality business that's growing profitability. It does have some net debt, but that's come down. I think it was to about 0.9 or 0.8 times EBITDA. But bear in mind, it's fully offset by freehold property. They own the factories to all bar one of their premises. So I tend to offset freehold property assets against net debt. Very, very nice business. It's doing well on the Nike trainers. That's their flagship product. I think it's just oversold. It's the wrong price. Completely. And today's trading update reassured. And again, it was an ahead of expectations update. So, yeah, I think it's fabulous value. Zotefoam, very nice business, and the shares are too cheap.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Looks a good one. We've got another one from Nicholas Slater, who's asking about your latest thoughts on Spectra, because he says, actually, which is a very valid point, the pound has been weakening, but the shares have been going down, and it's a big US generator, dollar generator. So you'd have thought, actually, it should be going the other way.
Yes, well, that's a good point.
What's your thoughts on Spectra?
I love it. It's just, I mean, it's pretty much unique. I don't think I've ever seen a company with such extraordinary entrepreneurial staff and management. It's basically about 20 boffins who, every time they see an interesting opportunity, invent a new product or system for it, and everything they launch works. It's just bizarre. I've all self-funding. It's profitable. It pays a 4.6% dividend yield. This is Spectra Systems we're talking about, aren't we? SPSY. Ford PE is only 6.6, but that's because it's a bumper year where they've had a large sensors order, which they get about every 3 or 4 years from a big central bank. Their products and services are all niche, pretty much unique. They do banknote cleaning machines. Yes, that is a thing. They do polymer security devices. It's almost like a small, more nimble version of Delarue. They've even got security products for games, computer games, and basically everything they do works brilliantly. It's an incredible company, and the shares have got a fantastic long-term track record. I think for me personally, this is just a tuck away and forget one. And it's, I mean, look at what the shares have done since 2017.
Yeah,
I think that's really a good 10-bagger. And I don't think they've issued new shares. No, share count has remained static at 48, 49 million. Really, really interesting company. So do have a look at it. Owner managed as well. The guy running it is just a genius, a sort of polymath. The figures speak for themselves. So, yeah, I love it. Totally off the radar, but it's got a very loyal following. People who find Spectra tend to buy the shares and just hold on them.
Yeah. Okay, good. We've got one question coming in from Paul the Parrot. He's asking about, I think it's Latham's, which is basically the Timber Boys, because he's got a ticker of LHTM, which I don't think it is, to be perfect honest. I've just been
no,
going.
No, it's LTHM, so you got that slightly wrong.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah, again, just one of my type of nice value go up type shares. They had a boom. I don't know why I got into my head. They sold fence panels, but apparently... it's much more sophisticated things than that. It's timber. Now, they did say in the most recent update a little while ago that they were being affected by African timber being dumped in the UK market at low prices because the EU has blocked it, apparently, due to sustainability rules. So the UK is getting all this cheap timber because presumably we haven't enacted the same rule, I would imagine. So that dented their margins a little, but they're still trading tremendously well. It's got an incredible balance sheet, family owned and run, stuff full of cash. So it just want to drool over. You know, I love balance sheets, Paul. I'm obsessed with them. And this is one, this is one that I find absolutely enthralling. And you're getting all that free cash and freehold properties. You're getting it for nothing because you're paying a modest multiple of earnings. And I think they've had the pandemic boom, you know, the lockdown boom for profits. And I think profits are now back at a level that is sustainable. So, yes, I don't hold any, but I like it a lot. I think it's one of those very, very nice, well-run companies that you just buy and forget and revisit it in 10 or 15 years' time, if you're lucky enough to still be alive. And you'll probably have made a ton of money and collected in loads of divvies. So, you know, yeah.
Best of both worlds. Another one in that sector, Etwin. I know you came out with a trading update. Resilient, I think it had the sort of headline. It does walk doors and windows, doesn't it, in the building products and stuff. This. What sort of like attractive is this, or what are your latest thoughts?
Yeah, I like it. This updated us on Tuesday. I love it at the moment because the market's really down on small caps, but we're getting bang up-to-date trading updates. And that's exactly what you want, in my view. You want to be buying things that have actually said to you, yeah, actually we're trading fine. Or I think Epwin said marginally ahead of forecasts. And yet you can buy this on a PE of 8.3. That's forward-looking PE. 5.9% dividend yield. I think its balance sheet was kind of okay, not amazing.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of debt. And you've got a cyclical upturn in its markets all in for free. So that's what you want, isn't it? We've talked a lot about the building products companies, and I think both of us think that's an area of rich picking. So for me, I want to buy the ones like this where you're paying probably, well, a modest single-digit PE for probably bottom-of-the-cycle earnings for businesses that have also proven they're resilient in a severe downturn. Whereas some of the brick manufacturers, for example, I looked at Forterra this morning, and you've got aggregates companies like Marshalls, you know, you're being asked to pay a PE of about 16 times in anticipation of a cyclical recovery. Well, that doesn't appeal to me. I want the upside in for nothing. And I think that's what you get with Epwind. So, yeah, I think it looks good.
You like your cake and to eat it there, don't you, Paul?
Yeah. Yeah, who doesn't?
Okay, we've got a couple of people asking about, we've got Dave P. and Ariel Cohen asking about Card Factory, the latest thoughts on this one, because it's gone through a bit of trials and tribulations of put about a trading update.
Yes, I've been buying this, again, for full disclosure, this week and last week. I think it's fabulous. Obviously, that's why I'm buying them. Because we had a you see that huge ski slope down? That was, I think we might have talked about this one last week or the week before, but that huge ski slope down was when poor H1 results came out, and it looked as if they wouldn't get anywhere near the full year figures, even though management said they would. Well, we now know they have achieved the full year numbers that they said all along they would achieve. But look, there's barely been any recovery in the share price. So again, I think this is quite obviously a share where there is forced or liquidity driven selling in the market, which is, you know, I've valued this personally just using, you know, a reasonable multiple and the forward earnings. I think this is worth sort of £1.50 to £2 now. You know, not forecasting in any growth. It's a very nice business. They're obviously a retailer selling cards and gifts. They're achieving good like-for-like growth by add-ons. The cards themselves, I think, was 2% growth. Yeah, we did. We talked about this last Friday. Yeah. So I'm repeating. But yeah, I think it's lovely. Probably the best bargain in the small cap space out there right now, I think.
Well, other than something like Equals, you mean?
Well, look, you've got bragging rights on Equals, Paul. It did what you thought it would do, and you made lots of money on it. So, yeah.
Oh, no, it was good. That was ages ago. Okay, let's move to another one. We've got Nigel Batty-Seams. He's asking about JD Sports. Can it go any lower? Crikey, it's doing obviously a bit of a, what's they got? I can't remember what those dancers were. The limbo dancers, was it? Anyway, can it go any lower?
JD Sports, it just is driving me up the wall at the moment. I did all my analysis. You know, the year-end update was okay-ish. It was slightly below the bottom end of the range, I think. They'd already said they were going to be near the bottom end. So it was only, you know, a single-digit percentage miss in profit terms. And the shares, just look at that. They're just in free fall, absolutely in free fall. Makes almost the same profit as Next, but the market cap's less than half, I think. I have noticed, though, on the broker consensus numbers that the brokers are downgrading it. So, but the trouble is, Pond Life, like us, don't get the premium broker notes. We just look at the share price and say, no, why is it falling every day? And it's because the premium brokers are tipping off all their clients that the future's not as rosy as it was. I'm going to buy more of these. I think now it's back down at 80p. I'm going to have a rummage down the back of the sofa and get some more. so it'll probably carry on falling, Paul. But what's your view?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I would say these guys are in a good position because the shoe manufacturers need distribution.
Oh, yes.
And they're all fighting over shelf space. And because these are one of the few places that do things like Nike shoes and stuff, then, you know, basically they should be getting, you know, better bang for their buck. But the shares just aren't reflecting it. They're obviously thinking, the shares are saying the consumer and discretionary spend is weak, and they're going to struggle, which we both know is not right, because
the
consumer on both sides of the Atlantic is pretty strong with positive real income.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the latest data in the UK showed wages rising 5.6%, which we're going to get inflation probably peaking at around 3%. So, I mean, that's 2.5 to 3% real incomes increasing this year. Your 16 to 20-year-olds are going to get something like a 16% pay rise in April.
Yeah.
So I think this is ridiculous. I mean, a lot of the business now is US-based, isn't it? And you do have the potential threat from tariffs there. Although that won't directly necessarily impact JD, but if they have to raise the selling prices 20% because of import tariffs on the shoes, then, you know, maybe that's something the market's worrying about. But I just think, to me, it's a great business. If you look at the 5 or 6 year history, it's grown incredible. Yeah. I think it's something like 10 billion revenues now, nearly 10% margin it's making. Mm. Balance sheet's fine. There's no issues with the balance sheet once you cross out the lease entries, which shouldn't be on there, of course. So, yeah, I just don't get it. I've obviously got something wrong, or this is a raving buy, I think. So I'll have to buy some more when I can find some money.
Okay, let's move sectors. A couple of healthcare early stage stocks that Paul Jordan, the PhD guy, said that basically he highlighted to me, and I thought they'd be worth just taking people through. First of all, Creo Medical, and the reason these guys are one of the world's leaders in electrosurgical endoscopy keyhole basically devices. And I'll just give you the picture. That's they sell two parts. It's a razor blade model. This is a power converter they use, and it's basically using like microwave technology to just make incisions and RF technology. And these are your sort of your disposable, effectively, tools at the end of this power. And every time they go into, used by a hospital or in a surgery, then they have to basically buy one of these effectively razors. So it's a razor blade, razor type of model. And the reason why this is dead interesting, okay, you could not get a better reference site or better reference of the quality of the technology, because it's inked to deal with the robotics giant Intuitive Surgical to stick these devices to do things like cancer surgery. This deal with Intuitive Surgical, which is like $100 billion business. And if that goes successfully, which they're already doing proper procedures on, then effectively this is going to become the de facto standard for taking out things like difficult to reach hard tumors in lung, the pancreas and the colon and stuff like that. They already sell a lot of the endoscopies into gastroendoscopy and neurology and stuff. And the reason why this is so good, it's basically more precise, less tissue damage for the patient, lower health costs, and faster patient recovery. And they're going to go through a really, if they're right, and this all comes down to expectations, but if they're right, the top line is really going to sort of like motor over the next 3 years. They've got sufficient funds. They raised 12 million at 24p in September, and they sold us 51% of their European business for effectively around about a net 30 million. So they've got plenty of money to do this. And as I say, their technology is best in class in terms of what it offers. And the shares just look too cheap to me. And you've got some really good shareholders on there. You've got like River Global, M&G, Amati, Bally Gifford, Hargreave Hale. So it's really, really good technology. It comes down to execution. I guess you probably have never looked at this one.
No, I have a few times actually, Paul. Yeah, it got very, very cheap a while back when it made the fatal or near fatal mistake of running out of cash, and everyone could see it was running out of cash, and it just went into free fall down to about 19p, and that was in lost 90% of its value from £2 down to 20p, which I think is just a terrible mistake that so many early stage companies on the markets make. You know, they don't need cash all the way through to break even with a year or two buffer. But nobody does that. They just do repeat fundraisers, and it kills the share price. It pulled something out of the bag, didn't it, with this disposal?
Yes.
Part of the business that nobody really seemed to know was even there, let alone.
It was the European. They sold 51% to Microtech.
So that was a game changer. That completely changed. The only thing I would say is it is a massive cash burner still. So even with those figures you're talking about, that only gives it about 2 years cash runway. And I think they've got a consumables business that generates nearly all the revenue. So yes, their keyhole surgery thing does sound incredible. And they've got, you know, they publish credible, things that doctors have said about it. And but the uptake of these things takes a long time and costs a lot of money. Yeah. They've got to train the doctors and things. So I don't know, for me, it's not something I would probably want to get involved in, because it's just and the trouble is if it does work, the upside will be whipped away from us, but somebody will just bid for it, won't they?
That's what Paul Jordan said. They have had just Yeah, they have had some big director buyings just recently, a couple of £100,000 at about 19p, I think. So, you know, you've got some people, even the directors, filling their boots on it. But I think your points are made absolutely brilliantly, because when it comes to leading technology, the UK has not put its best foot forward in terms of adopting it, particularly in lights of the NHS. And if they have that success with the Da Vinci, then that will be another game changer, which they do seem to be moving in the right direction. Now, another one in this medical, and I've never come across it, Feedback Medical. And the reason why I suggested having a quick look at it was that at the end of the conversation interview with Paul Jordan, I asked, every big fund manager, I asked him what your favourite stock is, the one which get you most exciting. And he pulled this out of the bag. He basically said it's definitely high risk. But he said, as a need, and Feedback Medical, their sort of flagship software is called Bleeper, which basically does a sort of end-to-end digitized SaaS software that manages patients right from the GP through diagnostics, outpatient treatment, and recovery. And give you an indication, that's what the current situation is: massively complex, massively long. And this is what they can do, and they've already demonstrated. They're basically selling this into the NHS at the moment, but I think it's only just sort of one customer. They're very early days, so it's definitely high risk. But he reckons that if they do get the adoption, and the NHS is the biggest one, or the UK private, and then India is another one where they've got really good proper opportunities. But if it does get adopted, then you get sort of 80%. We get 80% underlying gross margins on it. But it is, I would say, this is right at the edge of high risk, because it's only 10 million market cap.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't ring any bells with me, but I've just had a quick look at it. One thing I would point out is the share count in the last 5 years has gone from 2 million to 44 million, is fairly typical for these Jam Tomorrow Blue Sky projects. It's just they shouldn't be on the stock market. It's the wrong place for them. But every now and again, you do find one that gets to an inflection point. This is still burning a lot of cash and making heavy losses. So do we know what the current cash position is? Because that's the key question.
Yeah, the current cash is, they've got basically estimated net cash of May 2025. So in a couple of months, it's 5.4. They raised 5.5 million at 20p in November.
Oh, so that's fine. In that case, yes, I would look at it. If it's got a cash run, for me to go into speculative things, I want a cash runway ideally of 2 years. Then you can take a punt on it for 6 months, see how it goes, and still sell before they're desperately trying to raise more cash. So that actually sounds like it might be interesting. I will have a look at that, and we can maybe look into it in more detail next time, Paul.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I mean, Paul Jordan doesn't throw things like this out without actually, you know, he's done the due diligence on it. So
absolutely. Yes, that's right.
Okay, good one. One we don't normally cover, which I know has put results out, was LBG Media, which I think your colleague Dave had a look at. But
he did, yes.
Digital advertising. Do you want to take us through that one?
Yeah, it was actually a lot better than I expected. I've always kind of dismissed this a bit. The LBG stands for Lads Bible Group. And I think it's a bit like, I think, the Daily Mash or Viz. You know, it's sort of lad mag type media content, you know, that generates clicks and views and ads and so on. So I'm not keen on those type of businesses, because something always seems to go wrong when Google or Facebook change the algorithms. But Dave Wild, my co-writer, he had a fresh eyes on it, and actually he convinced me that this actually is a good company. It's not that small. It's 260 odd million market cap, I think, so reasonable size business, owner managed. Doesn't pay dividends, but it's nicely cash generative, and it's growing through acquisition. And interestingly enough, so it was it was floated at an overvaluation and it flopped. But it, as you can see from the chart there, it's since recovered over half of those losses. So it's a good, it's a proper business. The figures were good. It's on a forward PE of about 17 times, which is probably about right. It did say something interesting in the narrative as well about how Facebook unexpectedly changed some of the algorithms, which knocked them back in terms of their ad revenues. But they said they quickly adapted, and within a month, they were back up to, they'd recovered it. Now, that, I think, it's quite interesting, isn't it? That says to me, oh, well, maybe actually these earnings are more sustainable and resilient than I realized. So, as I say, we've only done really a first review of this share, so it's not something we know particularly well. But Dave concluded green on our traffic light system, which you know, I couldn't really argue with. I probably would have been a bit more moderate with amber green, but you know, the person who writes the review gets to color code on my site. And yeah, we think it's worth a look. So have a look at it, everyone, and let me know what you think.
Yeah, it's got a lot of cash on the balance sheet as well. I think it's about 10p per share. The other thing I would say that people should consider is what would happen to a business and similar ones like this if they ever did ban TikTok in the States. Now, from what Trump has just done, extended effectively its, you know, prevented it from being banned by another 72 days. It looks as though they're going to be forced into selling it to somebody like Elon Musk. And if that's the case, then there's no problem at all because it's just going to carry on. But if they did ever ban, so I think this, you know, LBG, I think Team Internet, and there's another one as well. I think that they get a lot of traffic, that there's cheap traffic from TikTok and then sell it on to Google and people like that, you know.
Oh, do they? Right.
I think it's a bit of an arbitrage at times, but that would be the only thing I would say, because if nothing happens to TikTok, then I think it's fine. But it could impact businesses like this, and you'd have to do some due diligence on that.
Yeah, definitely. And the changing of the algorithms thing is a constant worry with all these media type businesses. But I would say from what we've heard so far, you know, with America arguably now turning into an oligopoly of the mega rich, you know, it's dollars that count, isn't it? And if Trump's getting billions of views of his videos on TikTok, he's not going to ban it, is he?
No, it's like crypto. He loves it because he's got his own crypto, hasn't he? Meme coin. Okay, it'd be remiss of me not in the same sector to highlight System One that I know you've had a look at there, Paul.
Yes.
It's done really, really well. I think it does sort of neat software that helps you predict the efficiency and effectiveness of advertising before you actually, in fact, advertising campaigns before you actually push the button. So really helpful for getting ROI up.
Yeah, I spotted this one, I think it was the beginning of last year. I was a few months late because actually it was towards the end of 2023 that this business really started to take off. That was it. I went bullish on it in January. I was after that initial first leg up. Didn't buy any myself, though. It's so annoying. When you look at as many companies as I do, you review them, then you forget about them. So you forget to buy the best ones yourself. But anyway... something really good is happening here. And the latest update, which I think was about a week ago, maybe last week or this week, was ahead of expectations. So they've raised the profit figure again. It seems to be winning an avalanche of new contracts from big, you know, credible contract wins. So they've obviously got something that the clients like. And I don't need to understand the technology. All I need to understand is that clients like this and are buying it, you know, and that's what's happening at System One. So I think people should have a look at that. I think it's still reasonably valued from memory. But that, of course, is assuming that the growth is sustainable and it's not some sort of one-off boom that we're seeing here. But it looks as if something special is happening here. So if people haven't had a look at it, I'd be interested in their views on this. Forward P is about 21 times.
Yeah.
Modest divvy is 1.45. I think it's got net cash. If it can keep, and it's got some sort of platform, hasn't it, where self-service platform where advertisers can, and I think it has some sort of panel, a bit like YouGov, you know, a panel of the public. And doesn't it track their eyeballs or something, or their emotional responses to things? It's got some sort of edge. Yeah. Yeah. In terms of its service, that I think makes it look very interesting. Mm-hmm. Have you looked at this one, Paul?
No, I'm not really. No, other than it's got a good balance sheet and it's less than 1.8 times sales. I know you don't like that, but I think for a high value software type business with only 13% EBIT margins, I'd say they can push that higher as well. So that's why you can see it easily support a 24 times PE. Good quality business. Okay, we've got the final question from one of the we've got Eli, who's basically new in the audience, asking about one Spatial, which is basically a geospatial expert, largely in the UK, but branching out into the States. They've got this really interesting traffic management app, I think, called One Streetworks, that seems to be winning quite, you know, really good contracts there, you know, with local councils and stuff. I don't know whether you've ever had a look at this one at all.
Only very briefly. They were at Mellow Derby, and yeah, this was the share. I missed them as I got there late, but this was the share that everyone was talking about there in terms of very interesting presentations. And the shares have obviously been in a lovely, gentle uptrend now for 5 years or so, for 26 times forward earnings, no divvies, so a negative tangible asset value. So it's not a value share. But these sort of geospatial type software businesses, there was one that was taken out, wasn't there, at a big premium.
IQ Geo.
That was it. Yeah, they do seem to be gaining traction. And you're seeing with One Spatial quite good, I think 13% compound revenue growth. It is profitable. The cash flow statement wasn't very good, if I remember correctly, for this. I think because, if I, again, off the top of my head, I think they're capitalizing a lot of their payroll, which does flatter the profit figures. So have a, the thing to focus on is cash flow. But that doesn't necessarily matter that much when you're achieving organic growth. So I think this looks interesting. Yeah. Have you looked at it, Paul?
Yeah, I like it. It's good, high value business. I think they... Historically, they haven't had huge sort of like, you know, organic growth. But given that they're now into the digitization of everything, they make digital twins of assets in sort of like, you know, maybe, you know, hidden assets in roads and stuff like this, pipes and street works and all this sort of stuff. And therefore, they're exactly in the right place at the right time to see in that epicenter of catching the sort of the data and the AI to be able to improve maintenance, building, and all this sort of stuff. And clearly the competition's going to be, you know, sort of quite fierce, but they've got a great track record and really good customers. So I like it. And it'd be certainly one I would buy on any dips, no doubt about it. But I haven't got, like you, I haven't got any monies anyway. So.
Well, you will have when Equals pays out. We'll all be coming round for parties at your place.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
Thank you.
We'll crack open a few bottles.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, definitely. You worked hard for that, so you deserve you deserve the success. I in the back of my mind, I think I heard that One Spatial, doesn't it blend together lots of different data sources in some clever way?
Yes, into a data lake. Yeah, it basically takes it from the company, from outside references, and then you get this really good, reliable digital twin.
That was it. Yeah, no, it definitely looks interesting. You're better on software stuff than me. So if we both like it, then it could be worth people having a look at.
Okay, great, guys. We've rendered the we've finished the hour, so we'll sign off there. We'll just like to say that next week we're going to skip a week because I've unfortunately got a diary clash, as I explained earlier. So I've got Richard Staveley in the morning, and unfortunately, we're going to have to wait for 2 weeks for Paul. But I know there's masses through.
I know my place. I'm more than happy to play second fiddle to Richard Staveley because he's brilliant. So,
But thanks a lot, for everyone, for your questions. Superb, as always, and brilliant comments and insights there, Paul. So keep up the great work, and chat again in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.